I'm Richard Dodd, and you're listening to the Ecology Academy podcast. This is a show where we get to talk and learn about all things ecological, including interviews with top ecologists, both employers and employees, those working with ecologists, and also aspiring and inspiring career-seeking individuals setting out to make a difference. The show aims to provide you with insights, advice, and inspiration to help you succeed and excel as an effective ecologist, and to make a real difference to our natural environment. Today on the podcast, I have Nikki Glover. Now, Nikki has 10 years of experience in assisting and managing large-scale development infrastructure projects for clients and has experience working with local planning authorities. For the past 7 years, she has provided ecological support for Wessex Water in relation to large-scale waste and supply expansion schemes, as well as major pipeline schemes and wetland creation. And since 2017, she's been trained to handle great crested newt detection dog Freya, a Springer Spaniel, and is currently accompanying Freya operationally on translocation schemes in support of major pipeline installation works. And Nikki also holds Natural England survey licenses for great crested newt and hazel dormouse, and also a development license from Natural England. So, Nikki, welcome to the Ecology Academy podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'll also mention we've also got two other dogs who are also helping with the great crested newt detection. So we've got Nuki, he's been operational now for a couple of years, and we've got Obi, he's the apprentice, as we call
him. Apprentice, yes.
He's hopefully going to be operational next year after a whole host of assessments this year.
Oh, well, fantastic. Well, welcome to you all. I can't see any of your companions. So. Today we're going to be talking about great crested newt, and particularly about great crested newt and licensing, and also look at the surveying. But before we start that, let's hear a little bit about yourself. So tell me a little bit about your background and how you got into ecology and, up to where you're working with Wessex Water today, please.
Yes, I am currently a senior ecologist at Wessex Water. I was studying, it was an animal behaviour diploma at Reeseheve College. And I think the last module we had was on ecology. And I absolutely fell in love with it. And I thought, this is amazing. I really want to get into this. So yeah, I ended up doing environmental biology at Plymouth University. And yeah, I fell into ecology afterwards, helping a lot with bat surveys, trying to get my foot in the door. And then I got a job within a local planning authority down in Devon. So I helped assess with the planning application side of things. And then, yeah, managed to get a full-time position within an ecology company, AMEC, which is now Foster Wheeler, I think it's called. Keep changing the names. Yeah. Yeah, and then, yeah, started at WIG a couple of years later and got seconded out to Wessex Water. Yeah, and then Wessex Water took me on full-time. Yeah, and I think I was on a mitigation scheme and I was translocating some newts, and I thought there's got to be a better way to obviously find these great crested newts. And yes, yeah, so I did some research when I got home. There was a CIM magazine on the floor and it had my now trainer Louise Wilson on the front from Conservation Canine Consultancy, and she was doing bat carcass detection with dogs. And I thought, I've got to look into this. This looks amazing. Maybe we could use dogs to find great crested newts. So I did a bit more research and found that, yeah, Louise had actually done great crested newt detection with David Orchard. So yeah, basically I went off and stupidly got a puppy without any prior sort of training. Did something you shouldn't do. I also imprinted Freya onto curry powder, so she was the world's first Morrison's own medium strength curry powder detection dog.
Well, that's a first, there we go, as you say. Yeah.
So everything you shouldn't do. And then went to Louise when Freya was about 2 years old, basically have her assessed and obviously me assessed as a handler, because that was a big part of it. And yeah, so Louise was just, why have you got this curry powder today? Yeah. Why is the dog on curry powder? You need to have such small scent profiles, you know, curry powder's not really going to cut it. So we had to transfer over to bedbugs, which had a small odour, and kind of went away with that. And for our pastel flying colors, whereas I need a lot of training. And then applied for a license through Natural England in 2017, had that rejected because we went in blind, didn't have a clue what they wanted. And then so they came back with a whole host of bullet points of what I needed to produce in order to get a great crested detection dog license, to keep obviously the newts in captivity to imprint the dog, and one of it was research. So Yeah. Basically said, well, okay, I'll do a load of research, see how effective the dogs are, and kind of got addicted to that research. I met Robert Yale at a Hurt Workers meeting back in 2019 through David, and basically said what I'd started to do with the dogs. Yeah. And what we were finding out in the field with the dogs actually correlated with his GPS tracking, his radio tracking study.
So who's this?
Dr. Robert Yale. So the author of the Crested Newt book. And yeah, he's basically all his research side of things has basically implemented kind of like the licensing procedure, because it's given us a lot of information about how great crested newts use the land terrestrially and their movement from the ponds out into the terrestrial environment. So, you know, how we've got our buffer zones of 250 metres, 500 metres, that kind of stemmed from Robert's radio tracking studies that he's done. Yeah, so he is now my supervisor. So I'm doing a PhD, so I got a bit addicted to the research kind of thing. So initially it was a master's bio research, and loads of questions were still being opened. And yeah, so I thought, well, we'll make it into a PhD and do it more long-term and kind of try and understand all the environmental influences that affect the odour and how we can kind of adopt the training procedures to make the dogs perform really well out operationally. So yeah, really tight, intricate searches to make sure that we're covering the ground appropriately and the newts are picked up by the dogs. Mm. The scent, yeah, and we've basically found that they can detect them underground, 2 meter distance as well. We found them, yeah, and the soil type has an influence as well on the odor movement. So sandy soil, yeah, isn't as good for dogs to detect as opposed to clay soil, because we think the clay soil has the moisture content to hold the odor. So yeah, and they're aquatic, obviously they're amphibious species, so whether their pheromones are kind of communicate through the moisture content is there's a whole host of reasons it could be, but yeah, so it's been really interesting. And also vegetation density, the dogs, the ability to detect in different grass lengths and all sorts in comparison to hand searcher.
And I noticed, so you've written the paper there, so I'll probably link into the show notes to the article there. But I mean, I'm just literally reading part of the abstract here, and it mentions about, contrary to existing studies with detection dogs in human forensic context, detection was generally so what was the difference between human forensic and maybe detection with dogs?
So with cadaver detection, the dogs were better on sandy soil, and we think that's because it's more of a gassy odor, whereas the great crested newt's a completely different odor. That's why you really need to understand what the dogs are detecting, how your odor is going to be moving, interacting with the environment, because that will really influence your search strategy. So if I'm doing a search over spoil, spoil mound that's been dug out for pipeline pit, then if it's sandy soil, I've got to work a lot more sort of intricately over that, and I'll maybe get them to obviously take away the sandy soil bit, in sections, whereas the clay soil, I've got more confidence that the dogs will be able to detect them at a suitable, depth in that. And especially, I think if it's raining as well, that'll have a really big influence on that scent movement, that scent capture. So if we went and did a search on sandy soil that was actually really wet, I think the odour would still be captured in that a lot better than, if it's dry, a really dry day. So it's all these things that we have to think about. And not just newt sniffing, dog sniffing a newt in a container. There's so many elements to it that we've really got to think about.
In the real world, different environments.
Optimise the performance of the dogs and as handlers as well. So,
I suppose in terms of, we're going to be talking also about mitigation licences and the different types of mitigation licences that detection dogs have helped, secure, shall I say, in one way. So obviously, to obtain the mitigation license, any license at all, requirements of the survey element to it, and then the analysis. So, in terms of you mentioned part of that in terms of the survey methodology there. So, and you also mentioned about the struggles to actually get Natural England and maybe other licensing bodies to understand the efficacy of using detection dogs. So, just talk me through how it differs from a, and I'm going to use the word air quotes here, standard survey techniques for surveying for great crested newts.
So with the dogs, obviously, if we're, it depends on the scale of work. So we use the dogs a lot for precautionary methods, method searching, and we found that the dogs are actually better than hand searchers as well. I'll be releasing another paper hopefully soon showing the difference between a hand searcher with over 20 years of experience in comparison to dogs, both Nuki and Freya. And yeah, they basically cover the ground a lot faster as well. So yeah, I think they managed to find all the newts within half the time, and the hand searcher was still there on his hands and knees like half an hour later still trying to find these newts. So yeah, it was a really interesting study. Yeah, and we have someone in the team, our manager, who's got a lone pack class license. So if we're doing small scale works, for instance, drill pits aren't very big, but they're within close proximity to a pond, we'd eDNA, obviously, the ponds first to see whether the great crested newts are there, they're present. We don't tend to use dogs. Dogs can obviously prove presence, but as a tool to determine likely absence, it's difficult. Because obviously, when newts are out terrestrially, they could be anywhere within around the pond to, you know, up to a kilometre. I think they've even radio trapped newts. So if you've got a small population and they could be literally anywhere within the environment, so I think it'd be quite difficult to obviously prove like the absence, but obviously presence you could confirm with the dogs. But yeah, and basically, yeah, so we would do stuff under lone pack class licenses, which work perfectly with the dogs. So we can put the fencing up. We don't have to do any pitfall trapping. I like to keep carpet tiles down just to make sure we capture our amphibians as well, because obviously they'll get trapped within the construction area and the dogs are only locating great crested newts. So we've also done odour discrimination trials and the dogs were at 98% effective at discriminating between great crested newts and other amphibian species, because obviously they hold a higher level of protection than your common toad and your smooth newts and palmate newts. So yeah, but I'd love to get a general herp dog so they could obviously locate every single amphibian and then have my specific just great crested newt dogs, but that's down in the pipeline.
Okay, so they'd be trained for not just amphibians, just amphibians in general. It is specifically for great crested newt.
Definitely, and then we've also if we have larger schemes that are within close proximity to ponds with great crested newts, obviously we have to do the bottle trapping to work out population size, and then we have to go down the European Protected Species License protocol for naturally. And so we had a job last year where we had a burst main, well, a main that basically had root ingress, and it was potentially going to cause a pollution incident if we don't obviously act quickly and repair that main. So we had to, unfortunately, that main was positioned on a receptor site, so located obviously as a result of development, and there was quite a large population of great crested newts there, and the main sat right next to the pond. So in that instance, we did have to go down the European Protected Species License, but we agreed with Naturaling them that we didn't have to do pitfall trapping, and we also were able to clear that area within a third of the time of, obviously, in comparison to doing the pitfall trapping and the minimum 30 days that we have to do for that. So yeah, it was really effective. We found 55 great crested newts in under 2 hours as well. So, and that was above and below ground, exact precise location from the dogs. So I had to get my little trowel out and sensitively dig down and, you know, get the newts out, and also working out how many newts. There was about 10 in one kind of area as well. So making sure, obviously, running the dog back over to see if they're indicating if I've missed any So we have obviously different, depending on the scale of impacts. We usually have a couple of large scale translocation schemes a year, and then loads of precautionary little searches, and then quite a few, like loads of low impact pass license schemes as well. There's a lot of our works are linear, so we tend to come into contact close proximity to ponds quite frequently. Yeah,
because you mentioned about we start there in the introduction about, you know, the development license. So these majority of your works with the Wessex Water are under this development license. Is that correct?
If I'm applying for a European Protected Species license and I'm the named ecologist on the license, I have to be registered as the development license holder. So yeah, I asked for that a few years back. And originally, Natural England didn't want to give me the development license because I've only ever really dealt with temporary impacts and I haven't done permanent. But obviously, being within a water company, 99% of our works is temporary. We would never really impact, like permanently impact ponds. And we always try and avoid, you know, as part of the mitigation hierarchy. And yeah, it's more flexible where we can obviously put the pipelines as well. But yeah, so I did argue that in order for me to get that development license, I would have to basically infill some ponds or like cause some permanent impacts to an area, or basically leave Wessex, join a consultancy, work for more housing development style projects, and then come back and apply for it, or we just outsource our work to consultants. So luckily they did, yeah, they did kind of agree that it was difficult, obviously being in a water company, and yeah, 99% of our works is temporary. So yeah, they did grant me that development license, which was great. But yeah, my manager has the low impact class license, and it, yeah, like I say, it works so well with detection dog work. It's really, really nice, flexible. I think it's a 2-week process, license registration process as well, to get site registered. And yeah, we can kind of be flexible on the approach of how long we think we need to do, obviously, the translocation for. And that will depend on size of the area, the habitat type and things, how much refuge is in there as well. So obviously, if we're working the dogs in the day, they're indicating, and it's quite a difficult structure. For instance, we had indications on the side of a manhole, like the stone media around the manhole. So I couldn't get any newts out of that area. So I then came back with the dogs at night and the newts were out, they're coming out of the area. So I could then take them, yeah, away. So obviously it's trying to, yeah, kind of decide how to appropriately use the dogs at different times of day as well.
Exactly. So in terms of, I suppose, the differences between, as I'm going to use the air quote again, then a standard approach to surveying, and then also the translocation exercise, translocation of Great Crested Newts. How does it, so if someone was applying for a mitigation license, you know, not using dogs at all, what do you do differently, other than using dogs, in terms of the license application aspect to that? And does that have an impact upon, I suppose, the information required from Natural England to determine the license application?
So is that if we don't use dogs?
So are there any additional elements you have to provide, or fewer in terms of the license application?
We have to provide more if we're using the dogs, in terms of like a method statement to obviously show how we'll be using the dogs, because the actual application doesn't have that as a recognised method. Yeah, so we have to provide a bit more information on that. Whereas your standard stuff would be your pitfall trapping, and obviously that's recognised, and your hand searching and things like that. So, but yeah, the dogs are becoming more recognised as a method. So I'm hoping in the future we'll start to see that on the licence application forms, which would be, yeah, fantastic. But yeah, Natural England seem a lot more on board with the whole use of detection dogs now, which is fantastic. And they're the only, like I say, the only method that we can use to actually detect newts at distance, you know, at depth. You know, there's nothing else out there that we can use. And fingertip searching is, I don't know about you, how much you've done with that. It's not very effective at all, especially if newts are subterranean. You're not going to be able to detect them, you know, with your fingers and visually on the surface. So, yeah, using dogs is just...
No,
yeah.
I haven't acquired the ability to detect newts underground. It's beyond me, that, you know, and... In terms of then, you mentioned about the low impact license here, and you know, the full license there. Now, I mean, I know we briefly touched on, at the moment you're not using it for district licensing. Is that correct?
Yeah, we haven't. I guess it's down to us not really knowing much. We haven't done a lot of research on it, to be honest, within West, because I say a lot of the works are temporary, so we haven't had to really go down that route. We do have a scheme coming up next year that might actually be good to use under the district level licensing, but I need to obviously do a bit more research on that. And I'm doing a presentation for Nature Space in a few weeks, so it'd be interesting to understand their take on how they think dogs will kind of fit in with the district level licensing scheme that they're obviously rolling out. Yeah, so it would be interesting to see. But yeah, I guess watch this space. Yeah.
Well, I say, because it's, I mean, obviously using it isn't, like, I mean, to me, it's like a novel technique, you know, using, and it's been around for longer than we think, because, we think it's just a couple of years, but as you say, you know, you've been since 2017 with Newts, and I'm sure, obviously, it's been prior to that use. But yeah, I mean, it certainly attracts a lot of attention as well, doesn't it, in terms of, you know, both positive and, I'm sure, I don't know about negative, so how do you handle that in terms of sort of the attention it gets from maybe, you know, the mainstream media and elsewhere?
It's been brilliant, actually. It's really helped. Obviously, Newts have been persecuted quite a lot within the media for slowing down development. Like, Ed Sheeran couldn't build his chapel because there was a commit question Newts on his land, and Boris Johnson obviously say calling them, what was it, an economic strain or something, red tape. And and it was nice in that same piece where Boris was basically slamming Britcrest and Newts, they actually focused on Wessex Water and how we've actually deployed this novel technique to use dogs to obviously help with moving the Britcrest and Newts out of the way. I think it's a really nice kind of middle ground technique as well, whereas it's really fast and effective and efficient for the developer, so we can get on with it really quickly. But it's also really welfare wise, it's great for the newts, because we're actually using a method that's really effective and getting them out of the way, and not relying on tools that are really constrained by season, time, temperature, everything like that. The technique's really fantastic. But yeah, we've had the Wall Street Journal out with us last year after my paper got released. There was a big boom of media interest, and the Wall Street Journal contacted me and said, can we come out into the field with you? And I was like, this is definitely, like, you know, is this actually going to happen? And I was like, yeah, sure. And they're like, all right, we'll be there tomorrow, we'll get a train over to your local train station and you could pick us up. So I was like, oh god. Right, so yeah, they came out into the field and on a little job that we had down the road, and yeah, we ended up finding a great crescent newt in that. So that was really nice for them to see. And it's quite funny, just Freya dove into a bush and I had to go in after her. And this journalist I was trying to get him to come in with me to show him, like, what Freya was indicating on. And he was trying to climb in his, like, really fancy London attire with his notepad, trying to climb through this dense bush to see what Freya was indicating on. It was hilarious.
Did he get in?
Sorry.
Did he get into the bush? Did he? Was he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, reluctantly. He didn't really want to. But it's nice to see then raise the profile. And we've had on jobs at Wessex as well, like engineers going, we do get great crested newts, and we could have the dogs out. So a real positive spin on it all. And yeah, lots of people wanting to come out and see and just explaining a bit more about, you know, great crested newts and how good they are for the environment and everything, like, and people actually seeing them and caring a bit more about them, and knowing that obviously we have methods that we can help them get onto site a lot faster and stuff. So, and everyone loves dogs as well. Well, most people love dogs, but unless you're a cat person. But yeah,
we're not an animal.
I think it's a win-win. It's a fantastic method.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm beginning to I'm beginning to see the light, as I say. But in terms of, I keep mentioning that in terms of, but from the utilization of dogs in detection work, you know, I mean, obviously it's not just great crested newts, other species and other areas of work as well. But in terms of, I suppose, expansion of this, can you see that, I mean, there's going to be a greater use of maybe using detection dogs in conservation work in general?
Yeah, definitely. My trainer, Louise Wilson, she's doing a whole host of species detection. And she's actually collaborating with the Wildlife Crime Unit as well, so helping hen harrier poaching. Things, obviously, the dogs are trying to detect the hen harriers. And yeah, there's a whole host of stuff, just waterfall detection. Yeah. You know, if you're ever trying to look on the banks for waterfall using visual cues, it's really difficult, whereas the dogs can cover that ground so quickly and a lot easier. And Yeah, it'd be nice in the future for me to do something that isn't a live animal that's moving and lives underground, because it is such a hard odour to obviously train. The training takes a couple of years to actually be good at before, you know, you really get into the swing of it, and you've really got to understand so much about the dog behaviour. Any slight changes in behaviour you really have to pick up on, yeah, kind of push that dog into certain areas. So it's not an easy, as much as I'm promoting it, it's not an easy method. You have to be a really good, you know, handler, and really dedicated handler, and also think about your dog welfare, animal welfare, you know, wildlife welfare, everything you've got to think about whilst you're doing it. You have to multitask all the time.
Yeah,
it's a very stressful job. I've got so many grey hairs from doing it the last 7 years. So it's, yeah, it's not easy, but it's definitely worthwhile, and yeah, learning a lot.
Well, that's it. Because you mentioned about, I mean, we talk about obviously the, you know, the every technique has its advantages and disadvantages, and you know you broadly touched upon the sort of I say disadvantages, but areas to be aware of in terms of using this as a survey technique. So obviously, it's not just about the dog, as you mentioned, it's also about the handler. So I imagine that, you know, if I went out and got a puppy, trained it up, maybe not using curry powder. Yeah. I mean, can anyone set themselves up as a detection dog handler?
No. So it's not for the faint-hearted. It requires a lot of financial commitment, time commitment. Yeah, you've got to be out in the dark and when it's raining at night, you've got to be out in the day as well. And it's just, yeah, like I say, picking up on very slight changes to the dog behavior, and also switching off your ecology brain, which I really struggled with initially, because obviously as ecologists, we're looking at everything, we're really interested in everything going on. And I also love toads, and Freya started to pick up on that fact that I like toads. So she started to linger a bit more around toads when we've been out doing translocation schemes. So I've really had to shut off that emotion and, yeah, basically take a note where she's kind of lingered, and then get her to carry on search, and then put her away, go back, and then rescue these toads as well. So it's been really interesting. But you've really got to obviously shut your ecology mind off and become the dog handler, and then trying to balance that as well with also being an ecologist on site doing eCal. So you've got all your construction people watching as well. So the other day I literally turned up to a site to do some precautionary searches, and there was about 15 site guys watching. And then guys with trimmers as well, get ready to obviously trim the area down once we've done a thorough search. And it's just making sure that you're not distracted by any of that. You're really focused on the dog, making sure the dog's done a good coverage of that area, and you're confident that, you know, it's slightly absent, that there's going to be newts in that area before they come in and impact it. Yeah, so it's a lot of pressure, so much pressure on it. So yeah, you just got to be really resilient in that respect. And that's taken a bit of time just to get used to the amount of attention that we get with doing this type of work. Yeah.
I can certainly see that it does get a lot of attention, as you say. I mean, because it's, you know, if it's one of those things, you know, will it work? Won't it work? You know, so from a bystander's point of view, you know, you just want to see how they, you know, how effective the technique is, I imagine. But I suppose looking at the licensing system, sorry to take it back slightly to the system itself. Now, obviously, we are where we are at the moment in time in terms of the requirements, what you need to, you know, the application and demonstrating the, you know, efficacy of the survey technique itself, and also the length of period between, I suppose, submission of a license application and then return. So looking at it from a client's point of view, what benefits are there, and also what improvements maybe or could we be looking at? I mean, obviously not ourselves, but that maybe Natural England or the other licensing bodies consider when it's looking at, you know, improving, delivery time, really.
Yeah, that's what's really good with the LICL stuff, because it's just a 2-week registration process, and it tends to go through really smoothly. Some more sort of liquid would be great to roll out, but obviously I don't think Natural England are looking into that at the moment. Whereas your EPSL, that takes, it depends really. sometimes it's gone through quite quickly and taken 30 days. I think the one we did last year, that went through, and considering we were obviously using the dogs and we were proposing to reduce the time, I thought it might take a little while to get that application back. But I think because I work really closely with Natural England in the past, they know how much training and things like that I've done. So it went through relatively smoothly and quickly. Well, I say the 13-day period. Yeah, but it can sometimes drag a bit, and depending on who's looking at the license application. Yeah, so I guess a bit more streamlined would be great. And yeah, just trying to reduce delays, I guess, especially when we're trying to improve our infrastructure, you know, like our pipelines that are bursting and things like that. Be great to have a bit more quicker to kind of turn around for urgent schemes. Yeah, could potentially have some environmental impacts.
So that's interesting. Yeah. Then to say that, I mean, I suppose it's in one way, I suppose it can be quite logical in terms of, you know, delays, and also in terms of obviously knowing the license, the applicant, should we say, that, you know, the licensee, you know, the nominated ecologist, named ecologist there, obviously that can help. So therefore experience. And so they've got an understanding that, this person is a competent person, and they're always good in provide, you know, good information. So in one way, it is reliant partially on that relationship building between maybe, you know, that slow, I mean, whether it is a direct or indirect relationship between Natural England or actually the licensing team, an individual within the licensing team.
Depends who picks it up as well, I guess, for someone who might not be very experienced and may not know what I've done previously. They might not understand where I've kind of what I've done. So they're saying, this person's got a dog and they're saying that they want to do this, and they'll be like, and then kind of delay it, put it to the back of the pile, I don't know. And but I think it's more joined up than what it used to be, and I think it's more of a joined up approach. I deal with a lot with Matt Gill from Natural England, and he's been brilliant with obviously the detection dog side of things, and he primarily deals with that detection dog element now.
Yeah.
So I've got other associates in other companies that are doing, you know, great Christian Newt detection, and it's actually we're asked the same sort of stuff now, whereas I think previously when I got into it, I dealt with one person from Natural, and they were asking for a lot of stuff originally, and this other company wasn't, so it was not very kind of joined up. So it's great that it's kind of developed a more of a standard kind of approach. And obviously with the guidelines I can't remember if I mentioned that we've produced some guidelines as well for those looking at getting into Great Crested Newt detection. So if you're trying to apply for a license, I would have killed for this right at the beginning. Yeah. So it basically gives you all the information that you need in order to apply for that license, keep newts in captivity, to do Great Crested Newt detection. So I'll kind of take you through that. And it's the advisors for the use of detection dogs for conservation. It's on that website. And it's myself and obviously Louise, Dr. Robert Yale, Rachel Flavelle from Paws for Conservation, Aaron Klein as well from Paws for Conservation, Luke Gorman from Atkin. So they've been a big procurer in the use of detection dogs as well. They've been real advocate for the use of them. And Kat Stanhope as well from Atkin. So it was a really nice document that we were able to produce for governing bodies. We had Nature Scot review, we had Arcturus review, we had Natural England review. Fortunately, we didn't hear back from NRW. Which was a shame. But we had really fantastic feedback from the other bodies.
So where's that document again? I mean, if you could provide me with the link, I'll put it into the show notes as well. Yeah, what was the website again?
It's Advisors for the Use of Detection Dogs for Conservation. It's ADDC.
ADDC. Okay, great. Thank you. I suppose we're coming to the sort of towards the end of our conversation. You'd be very generous with your time, so thank you. Such early on in the morning as well, first thing. In terms of, I mean, I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile here, and obviously you mentioned here about new detection dog shadowing consultation opportunities. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about that. You said it's been your third year running. So what's the aim behind this then?
this is just, it's an opportunity for people to actually come out with me in the field and basically see the dogs work and see the dogs locate great crested newts in the wild, above ground, below ground. Yeah, it's just, I also would have killed for this when I got into it, just to actually see what's required. And instead of, you know, it's just, instead of having that whole investment into it without actually knowing exactly what is required, it's a fantastic way to actually see the dogs work, the type of dogs that you need, yeah, the type of, you know, non-invasive indications that they give, how long we can be out for. We can talk about everything as well during a biosecurity, obviously welfare rotation of the dogs, Great Crested Newt ecology, licensing, like everything we cover. I've had people over from Austria. A lady came over with Vivier and the Czech Republic as well. So they were doing crested newt detection over there. So yeah, it's been really good. I've got a lady coming over from Australia this year in May to actually come out and shadow me, which is crazy. Yeah, but yeah, it's really, really fascinating. It's a fantastic way to, and it's a one-to-one kind of session as well. So yeah, and they can have a little go handling under obviously my supervision, kind of get a feel for it, see whether it is something that they want to invest in. A very honest person in terms of like time, yeah, every aspect of investment that you have to give, just to see whether you really want to get into it, because it is a lot, it's a big long journey from the start to obviously getting out there operationally. And the learning never ends, even when you're out there operationally, still learning now, and I will forever be, learning. So, yeah.
Exactly. It's continued learning, isn't it? So, yeah. I mean, by the time this podcast goes out, I'm sure you would have filled up all your spaces there. But is this something that you run? I mean, I said it's a third year running, but, you know, I mean, I'm looking for 2025. I mean, is this probably look? I mean, don't say, you know, commit fully, but I imagine it's something you may be looking at repeating again maybe next year.
Yeah, definitely. And you see, I'd stop sort of May time, because that's when my trials will commence. So I get really busy up until sort of September, October, and then it dies off a bit. So then I offer another kind of autumn session as well before they go into brumation. So yeah, it's a nice kind of, yeah, either end really. So if you are interested, so I'm the back end of this year as well before the winter kind of hits again. So yeah, and 2025, hope there'll be, depending on where I am, what we're doing at Wessex, because they're looking at expanding the dog facilities at Wessex, so I might be a bit busy next year, I'm not sure yet.
Well, I can see that. I mean, again, it seems like after globally, you've given a lot of presentations, you know, I'm sure, you know, video conferencing as well, you know, on that aspect, but also within, you know, obviously within the UK, it's the, is it reptile, you know, is it the reptile and amphibian?
Yeah, the Hurt Workers Meeting, Herpetological, Workers Meeting. Yeah, it was lovely. Jim Foster, the Arcturus directors, he actually invited me to give a talk, which was so lovely. He's just like, I think back in 2019 when I went to the one at the Hurt Workers Meeting, that's when I met Robert. I think the use of dogs, it was still not considered at that point. And obviously with all the research that I've done, the paper that I produced last year, it's really got the attention of people and really want to understand it a bit more. And so I give a lot of the scientific results that we've got and also operational findings. So it's a really nice kind of, I can give both of those aspects. It's not just a controlled research trials. It's also that operational finds that we've had. And obviously I work operationally, but also I'm a researcher. So it's a nice kind of combined aspect. But I'm also, we've got a detection dog symposium at the World Herpetological Congress in August that we've set up. So we've got all detection, reptile and amphibian detection dog handlers come across the globe to basically be in the symposium, which will be fantastic. That's held in Borneo. So it would be really, really, really lovely to meet everyone and everyone that I admire in the field and just really kind of talk about what they've learned, what they can recommend, and we can learn off each other and kind of move forward. Really, it's all about sharing knowledge, I think that's how this will grow, is by sharing, being able to share knowledge. And some people can be a bit closed off sometimes and not want to expose what they're doing or how they're doing it. I think in order to, we've got to think about, obviously it's Great Crested Newt that we're trying to protect here, and amphibian and reptiles, though it's, and they're in massive decline. So the more we kind of share, the more we understand about how good the dogs can be, the capabilities, and the better for them, their conservation status. And
Wow, I tell you, there's a lot going on. There's a lot that you get subjected to and you hear about. And I think this work is an amazing. You know, it's something I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about. You know, we have in the past few years, but I think it's going to be become more important in terms of conservation work. You know, I say not just roots, but other species and biodiversity restoration, I'm sure too. But Nikki, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. I do apologize we're cutting short in our time, but I just wish you and Freya and Obi and Nuki all the best for this forthcoming season. But for now, thank you for joining me on the Ecology Academy podcast.
No problem. Thank you for having me as well. It's been great talking to you.
If you are a show and want to help, then please click on the subscribe button and rate us on your favourite podcast player, as that's how you can inspire ecologists in the making, help retain great talent, and provide insights of our industry to a much wider audience of why ecology really does matter. Thank you. And remember, learning is a lifelong endeavour, so stay curious, be adventurous, and build bridges for others to cross.